trouble, see, I'm home.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to Having a Ball podcast. I am your host, Erica. And I say host, not co-host, because it's just me this time. Lucy is taking a couple of weeks off of the podcast because she has a lot going on in life. You know, that happens sometimes, and sometimes we need a break and prioritize things that are, of course, much more important. So hopefully we get her back soon because, of course, the magic of our podcast, I feel, is the dynamic that her and I bring to it. Her different views, my different views, bringing them together, and the research that we both bring together from different sources and our ideas on these movies and episodes that we review. So hopefully we have her back soon. You are missed, girl. And hopefully I do it justice as well. So today's episode that we are reviewing is Lucy Becomes a Sculptress. Now listen, I am a big fan of the physical comedy that Lucille Ball brought to pretty much everything she ever starred in. I think that was mainly what, you know, her muscles that she really, really always overused was the physical comedy. The strength in her acting was that. And here she is so heavily pregnant that she, of course, had to rely on her facial physical comedy. That in it of itself is quite the talent, quite the skill. It's like a rubber face, like a Jim Carrey level talent, because not everyone can do facial physical comedy. And so here it really shines on the screen with this episode. I'm not doing any spoilers, but towards the end, of course, she's in the bust of her face, and that there is quite the skill. So in Lucy Becomes a Sculptress, this is episode 15 of season 2, aired January 12, 1953, directed by William Asher, written by Jess Oppenheimer, Madeline Davis, and Bob Carroll Jr. This was actually filmed November 7th, 1952. This episode, the Lucy Becomes a Sculptress episode, is actually based off, like many of the other episodes are, from Lucy's radio show, My Favorite Husband. Episode number 99, Liz Becomes a Sculptress. Now, I need to go back and listen to that because I know that here, she's very concerned about this baby coming and who's going to teach it to, you know, explore its musical and artistic talents. So she has a reason to want to be this sculptress. I don't know what the premise is with Liz Becomes a Sculptress, so I do need to go back and re-listen to that. And the synopsis here, much like I just presented a bit, is that Lucy's concerned about who is going to teach this baby the arts, the music, because her great-grandfather was a very skilled and talented and famous artist. As we open up the show, you'll see that they show a photo of her great-grandfather. And so, of course, Ricky's not a big fan of this because when she gets ideas, they always end up being something more than the idea. She goes into trying to become a sculptress. Hilarity ensues. There's an art critic in there. There's a bust of someone's face. It's a mess, but a fun mess. So that's the premise for this episode. As we open up the show, Ricky comes home and he's surprised that she's up, which I think happens a lot during the pregnancy episodes, that she's supposed to be resting and he comes home really late and she's doing something. Last time, I think it was she was trying to bathe or change the diaper of a doll. So this time she's looking at baby pictures of Lucy and Ricky, which are actual baby photos of baby Lucille and baby Desi. And if you are in any bit of a Lucy fan, then you know that these were, of course, actual photos of them, but we've seen them before in their Desilu production offices, where it says president or our president and vice president. And of course, it's a photo of Lucy, baby Lucy and baby Desi with them in present. So she also makes a reference to one of her films when she looks at Desi's photo in his outfit and she says, "What did they call you, Fancy Pants?" Of course, that was perhaps a reference to her film Fancy Pants of 1950 with Bob Hope. Fancy Pants was a romantic comedy, kind of a Western romantic comedy, directed by George Marshall and starring, like I mentioned, Bob Hope and Lucy. It's a musical adaptation of Ruggles of Red Gap. She is looking at a Navy photo of Desi Arnaz. Now, if you want more information on a Desi Arnaz biography, but the caveat here is you have to understand Spanish, I did do a Spanish language biography. It's on YouTube and it's on one of our podcast episodes where I do show on the YouTube episode all these really neat photos of Desi Arnaz as a child, as a baby in Cuba. So she shows a photo of her great-grandfather, and he's dressed up as an artist in a smock, of course. He's got this crazy mustache. And she's explaining to Ricky that, you know, he was very famous as an artist. And now she has a concern. She's concerned about who is going to teach this baby either the arts or music, or if he has a talent because of his lineage, who is going to help bring that out? And she points out, of course, that if he's musical, Desi, Ricky, can do that. If he's artistic, and she, of course, pauses because the self-deprecation is always there, who is going to teach him the arts? Now she's in a crisis. She needs to be an artist ASAP because this baby's on its way. And as Ricky later points out, the timing is 3 weeks. So the timing here with last episode and this episode is a little off because I think the last episode she was maybe 6 months pregnant and now she's 3 weeks out from having this baby. So the math is a little off there. I'm wondering, do parents, listen, I have a daughter who's 23 years old, so my worrying about a baby is long gone. And so I wonder, do parents or new parents or expecting parents have a big concern about artistic talents and abilities like this? Is it something because of a lineage? Let's say they have a grandparent who is a artist or a writer or something like that, that they feel a need to bring that out once this baby is born, or who's going to teach it, you know, things like that. I suppose it is, because you, especially first-time parents, you always want to make sure that everything is perfect, everything is lined up, and we are on the road to success with this baby. And Lucy, of course, is no different. Now, another thing that was shocking to me, and it shouldn't be because we've been watching these episodes from the 1950s for a long time now, so it stands out to anybody, but it's a little more jarring when you really study it frame by frame, is how often Desi is standing next to a very realistically and in real life pregnant Lucy and smoking. I mean, he's full on smoking. And I'm just baffled as to how that was so okay in society. I know it's not something that happens now, of course. And for goodness sakes, if we ever saw that, we'd be very much appalled. But just the idea that he's standing feet away from her and just full on smoking, and she's very heavily pregnant, is sometimes still jarring to see. So he says, listen, you always have these ideas. You want to become this great artist in 3 weeks' time. It's silly because, you know, all her ideas become silly at some point. And she says, you know, she wants to try painting or some sort of art. And he says, oh, maybe you can dabble in some watercolors and see where that goes. It almost sounds like he's trying to entertain and appease a child. So then we cut to the art store because, of course, she's on this endeavor now. And she ends up at this art store where everything you can think of supplies, tools, accessories, paints, watercolors, clay, everything you need to start or continue in the arts is there. And here is where she starts with the facial physical comedy, because of course she can't move very much. So of course everything is relied on that face. And, you know, there's a funny looking statue and she mocks it. So I'm a big fan of the facial physical comedy. So she starts making these funny positions and she's unaware that the art store clerk is right behind her. And this art store clerk is played by a Russian-born actor named Leon Belesko, who actually did 3 movies with Lucille Ball, one of them being Meet the People, Girl and a Guy and a Gob, and Beauty for the Asking. And he also actually appeared in 3 episodes of The Lucy Show. So he has a history with her as well. And he you know, when you walk into a store like this and their job is perhaps dependent on commission or how many sales you make, not necessarily like an hourly wage sort of thing, it's funny to see how immediately they go into salesman mode. And he sure does that here. So she's not very sure as to what she's looking for, what direction to go to. And she says, you know, I'm trying to see if I could do some... Well, actually, he starts to ask her what sort of media is she interested in. Of course, she is completely oblivious as to what media means. You know, are you into painting? Are you into clay? Or are you into finger painting? Which, of course, she says, finger painting, that's easy. I don't have to buy anything. I already have these. Of course, she lifts up her fingers. And that's the thing that he gloms on to and says, hold on. Let me see those fingers again. And it's just, she's so easily manipulated. It's so funny. And I've never seen something so beautiful, such form, such rhythm, such movement. Because he gives her this big blob of clay and says, here, do something with it, form something. And she just squeezes it once. And he says, you know, that line, I says, such movement, the world is waiting for a squeezer like you. Sorry. Oh my gosh. And she's totally falling for all of this. And he's just trying to make a sale. And he says, you know, I'm going to bring the owner, Mr. William Abbott. You've certainly heard of him. She's like, oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. And he brings out the art store owner. Now, William Abbott, the owner, is played by Shepard Menken. We've seen him before in I Love Lucy. He's in Paris at Last. He's in Lucy Has Her Eyes Examined. You know, he plays the doctor. What wall? Sorry, you see that wall? And also he plays in The Adagio, Jean Valjean, Ramon. And he comes out. Now, this skit here that they, you know, this whole little act that they play for her to make a sale is very reminiscent of the episode in The Girls Go Into Business. If you remember, the older lady that is selling the business does this whole thing with fake customers where, oh, I'll take a scarf, I'll take, you know, a sweater, I'll take this coat and this lovely hat. And they think they're making sales every 2 to 3 minutes. And of course, it's just to get her to buy the shop, her and Ethel buy Lucy and Ethel's dress shop, or Ethel and Lucy's dress shop, or Lucy's, or Ethel Lou's, whichever you like. So, of course, that's what that reminds me of. And, you know, that's a pretty good gimmick when you're trying to pretend that you're much more successful, or that someone, you know. Now, is this called gaslighting, what they're doing here? Or am I misunderstanding the meaning of the word? Because they're trying to make her think that she's got this talent by pretending that what she just squeezed into the clay was actual art. So, of course, he says, no, I'm sorry, this is not for sale. This is ours. We're going to keep it. And the clerk says, no, she just made this herself. Oh, wow, you're amazing. You're so talented. And, you know, of course, now they're ready to, now that you've pitched and you've given the compliment, it's now earning the sale, of course, in marketing. And now you're going to throw at her what the product is that you're selling. And she, of course, says, how many pounds am I going to need? 10? How about 25? How about 50? You have a big talent. And now she swindled into this. Here is where another thing that shocks me. And maybe it's just, you know, a sign of the times. Maybe this is how people who are well off purchase things. But she literally just hands them a blank check and is like, here you go. Just send whatever I need. These people are trying to swindle you. You're giving them, carte blanche to send you whatever. So you'll see in the next scene that, of course, they did send over quite a bit of things. So she's got a whole getup and everything. So he kisses her hand, the owner does, and she's in this, you know, giddy, dazed sort of glazed look now because she's like flattered. And, you know, listen, when we're that pregnant, any sort of validation is very much welcome. So I don't blame her, but it's just funny to see. Now, the next scene here is, of course, her in the smock and tam. And she is now trying to sculpt or shape some sort of clay. And somebody has to do a video compilation of the many times that Ricky comes home and opens the door and has this shocked look on her face, because he does this so often, because there's always something shocking on the other side of that door. And so, you know, he comes in and he's stopped in his tracks because she's doing something in this getup and he can't figure out what it is that she's doing. And she's sculpting something, some sort of statue. And she says, "I bet you can't tell what it is." "Of course I can." "All right, what is it? Is it a boy and his dog? A girl and her dog?" He's clearly not impressed, but also not trying to hurt her feelings. And it's a child at its mother's knee. He goes over to the statue and goes, "Coochie coo, that's the knee." Now, that's just hilarious. "That's the knee." Oh my gosh. And of course, Ethel then comes in. Now, I love what Ethel is wearing here, by the way. She has kind of like Lucy has the signature dress of the polka dots that we always see. Ethel wears this dress often with the arrows, kind of like an arrow collar look. And I really like that. I think that's kind of her sort of signature look because she wears that often. And she's trying to, you know, she asks Ethel, "Maybe you have some artistic eye. Tell him what it is." And she's got this confused look because she can't figure out what it is either. Which, by the way, listen, when you start becoming a very talented and famous sculptor, you're not going to be able to just design something immediately or, you know, form something immediately. You know, modeling clay is really, really hard. And, you know, I work with fondant on my cakes, and that's sort of similar to clay, Play-Doh, I don't know. And so even that in itself is difficult sometimes. So I can't imagine what working with clay is like. Now, Ethel can't figure out, and she says, and Lucy says, "It's as plain as the nose on your face." "Oh, is it the nose on somebody's face?" "No, it's not. No, Ethel. It's a boy with his, what, mom and her knee or something." Oh my God, this poor Lucy. So she says, you know, that she needs a model. Maybe she wants Ethel to model. And she says, "You have the head, your head is shaped like the head of a Greek coin," you know, of course, gassing her up to really want to take on this modeling, because she says, "No, I'm not doing that," because she wants to model people's faces and, you know, make a portrait of somebody or just a bust of somebody's face. So of course, like every other idea Lucy gets, eventually the Mertzes or Ricky are joined in. So in here, Ethel does sit down as a model for her so she can start modeling her face, or, you know, forming her face in clay. And she's sitting there and she's very antsy, Ethel is, and Lucy's trying to concentrate and create this, you know, face. And Ethel's starting to tell a story about Jane Sebastian being overdue and ending up having twins. You know, she's gossiping or maybe just telling a story about her friend Jane Sebastian. Now, interestingly enough, though, twins don't usually run full term and most definitely aren't late, if I'm not mistaken. So that wouldn't be realistic, but it's just funny to listen to. Now, in real life, Vivian did have a friend named Jane Sebastian. And she was actually the godmother to one of her kids. She was mentioned a couple of times. Jane Sebastian was in I Love Lucy, in Lucy and Ethel Buy the Same Dress. And I think it was one of the Hollywood episodes where she also mentions her as well. But we never see anybody named Jane. So then Fred comes in. Well, first of all, Ethel loses patience because she looks at this bust or this art that she's created, and of course it looks nothing like her. So she says, well, you kept moving, so I couldn't really do it any justice. And she says, no, I'm done. You can do the back of my head as I'm leaving the apartment. So she's over it. Fred comes in. And Fred just immediately is suckered into this because he says, you have real classic beauty, real classic features. Of course, your head looks like the head on a Greek coin. And he's feeling himself for a hot minute, and cut to him posing in what I can only describe as a onesie or long johns, pajamas. And he's posed in this discus thrower position, which is just so unfortunate because, first of all, he's an older man. So having him stand in that position for a long period of time is just cruel. I can't imagine. It hurt my back just watching that, and I already have a bad back as it is. So watching Fred in this position looks really, really painful. So he's struggling because he's holding a plate, a literal plate, and he's in this, like he mentions later, in a bowling position. And he can't stand up. Now, when he's in this position, again, please, another person make an audio or visual compilation of Ricky just losing his mind, cracking up, and doing his infamous laugh, because he walks into this scene of Fred in his underwear or pajamas or long johns and, you know, standing like a statue, and he laughs so hysterically loud. And he says, you should see what she's doing to you over here, because this thing that she's forming with her hands is just, I don't know what it is. But I mean, I can tell it's sort of in the shape of a man standing like a discus thrower, but it's certainly not looking like Fred. And, you know, he says, I got to see what you're doing to me over here. And he tries to stand up straight to see what's happening in this clay, and he can't. This poor man is just folded in two now. And, you know, he's folded in half, and he's heading back to his apartment to see if Ethel can help him, because he can't. And Ricky says, look what you did to poor Hercules Mertz. Of course, it wouldn't be a Hercules reference, but it's still funny. He says, you know, you can't keep doing this to your friend. You're running out of models here. You're running out of friends. And Ricky certainly isn't going to sit there to have himself modeled after. And she says she needs a professional model because she said, Michelangelo, I wonder if he had any problems with his models. And Ricky mentions that he probably had professional ones. That's what I need, a professional model. Now, listen. He said, this is where we're on day two of this artistic endeavor. And he says, no, that would be too expensive. They want $8 to $10 an hour, at least. Now, this is where Lucy would come in, my partner Lucy, because she's always the queen of inflation information. $8 to $10 an hour would probably be, what, $80, $100 an hour now? Because I can't imagine how much it would cost to have someone standing there for hours in the same position in today's money. He shoots that down immediately. She gets her feelings hurt, of course, because of course she does. You don't love me or the baby. And that's always her go-to, to kind of guilt him into wanting to do something. And of course I do, but I just don't know if you have the talent for this. She feels she's being held back, that she isn't able to, you know, freely show all the artistic talent that she has. So he says, fine, listen, I will bring home an art critic. And if he says you have any sort of talent, I'll help you out. But if he says you don't, then you forget all about this. Now, that's pretty impressive that he just has an art critic readily available to show up to a New York City housewife's living room and see her, you know, dabbles in art. Not any art critic, by the way, a New York Times art critic. That's pretty impressive. So she's excited and says, okay, great, then I'm really going to outdo myself and show what I can do. Cut to the next scene. They are in the kitchen. She's in the kitchen. Ethel comes in to a scene of her mixing plaster of Paris with her hand. I don't remember the last time I actually used plaster of Paris. I think I was a child. Someone tell me if I'm mistaken here, but isn't there an art project where you cover a balloon with plaster of Paris? Did I dream that up, or is that an actual thing? Because I remember the only time ever using plaster of Paris is when I was a kid, and it was in a sort of an art project at school. Anyway, so she's using plaster of Paris and she's mixing it with her hand, and Ethel comes in and she's explaining that this art critic's coming in and that she will be making a bust of herself using this plaster of Paris. Now, this scene here, or this mention here, this joke here is pretty funny, because she says, "I'm going to make a bust of myself." Ethel says, "I thought you had already done that." And she laughs at her own joke. And Lucy gives her like this look of death, like she's not amused with that joke. But it was a pretty good joke. Kind of like when they said, "We're revolting." And Ricky says, "No more than usual." You know, kind of like that. The double meaning speak is really, really funny here. So she's explaining that the way you use plaster of Paris is you cover the object that you want to form. Then when it hardens, then you break it. And then she goes, "Whoa, you're going to put that all over your face? How are you going to breathe?" She's very concerned about the breathing. And Lucy's like, "Oh, I didn't even think about that," which is... sounds about right, you know? I mean, she was very, very serious about wanting this to look realistic and impressing this art critic that she didn't think about the breathing part of it, because she'll be covering her whole face in it, which is pretty darn scary. Now, then, of course, during this whole conversation that they're having, this plaster of Paris is hardening and her hand is stuck, which is very reminiscent of that Hollywood episode where she has... Ethel and Fred and Lucy steal John Wayne's footprint, and you know, she gets her foot stuck in the bucket of cement. So there's a lot of plaster of Paris and cement being stuck in places. I don't know. So the next scene is she finally has something to show this art critic, right? So Ricky comes home with the art critic, Mr. Harvey. And she isn't there, but Ethel is. And he's kind of shocked that she isn't here to want to show it to Mr. Harvey. But then the art critic says, "You know, I actually like it when the artists are not here, because I can actually freely criticize it without them being present." So the art critic is actually played by Paul Harvey. And he's from the New York Times, apparently. And of course, Harvey also being the real name of the actor, so there's no forgetting what his name is here. So Ethel shows the bust of Lucy's head. She removes the sheet and she says she put 7 mirrors around herself to capture every angle, every nook, every cranny, everything. And they are very beyond impressed, because of course it's an exact replica of her. She's got her eyes closed, but the hair, everything looks exactly like her. And Ricky is shocked and she says she did this herself. And she says, "Wow, if this is your wife's first attempt, then you know, she's a genius. You have real talent here." And he's very excited. And now he mentions that he wants this piece of art for himself. And Ricky's like, "Absolutely, she'd be excited to sell this." Of course, as we know, it's actually Lucy. Lucy's under that table. She's covered in the clay. And she's, you know, as, you know, breaking the fourth wall, we can see her. She's communicating that she's concerned. And Ethel's the one trying to show off this whole statue that's happening here. Now, Mr. Harvey says that he wants to take it because he's going to a conference, an art conference, and he wants to have it with him. Ethel then, of course, says, "I don't think that I should sell her art without her being here or having a say in it." And Ricky agrees for a minute and says, "Yeah, I wouldn't want to take on the responsibility." And Mr. Harvey says, "I'll pay $500 for it. I can take on the responsibility." Now, here's where I question why Mr. Harvey is so aggressive. If he thought this was an actual actual legitimate bust of Lucy's head, the way he goes to grab the art is so aggressive. He grabs it by the neck or the head. You know, if you really thought it was something, you know, valuable, you wouldn't grab it so aggressively. But of course, it was probably done for comedic effect. And he grabs a head. And of course, she screamed because it's really, really Lucy. And he, with a swiftness, grabs that check back from Ricky and leaves. And of course, Ricky does the infamous Lucy, because of course he does, because the poor man's nerves are through the roof every single episode. So that's pretty much the end of that, you know, and probably the end of her art and sculptress career. And, you know, that's the end of that episode. And, you know, it did dawn on me a little bit that there was a lot of keeping her covered up in this episode. You know, we all know that she's very heavily pregnant, but she is under the tablecloth in this big smock. So really the focus, the main character here, is that facial physical comedy that she is so great at. And like I mentioned, you know, the way that Ethel messes up, did I skip over that part? Of course I did. She messes up the art. She messes up the face of the sculpted art by putting one lip up, which I can only describe as an Elvis curl, and the other lip down. Try doing that. We can't. It's not very, very easy to do. And Lucy, it was second nature and came to her so natural, which is why she was who she was, the, you know, queen comedienne when it came to physical comedy. And her face was also part of that. And so that was just an example of the abilities that she had. And she says, you know, I'm pregnant. That's okay. We can use something else, my facial skills. And that was certainly shown here. So with that, I really do thank you for sticking with us and listening to our reviews and our rundowns of these episodes. And I hope I did it justice. And hopefully maybe next week I'll have a guest on for the review of the next episode, because we are very close to her having this baby. And that is my favorite episode, is when she goes to the hospital. So looking forward to that very, very much. With that, I thank you for listening, and please let me know what you thought of this review, what you think of our podcast, what you'd like to listen to more of, and anything else you'd like to let us know. Find us everywhere on havingaballpod@gmail.com for any email, commentary, questions, anything like that, suggestions. Havingaballpod on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and everywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts. Thanks, guys.